Hey, folks. In the middle of this episode, we did decide to smoke a little bit of weed. So there is going to be some intoxication in the second half-ish of this episode, just so you know.
I'm a bit of a silly guy.
Yeah, but we just wanted to give you a heads up in case that would bother you. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and if I could have taken a class in university on sexual ethics, oh, I would have signed up for that shit so fast. I took, like, ethics of death and ethics of, I don't know, some other shit, but they weren't offering sexual ethics because nobody's on our galaxy brain level, and maybe I should just teach a university level course on sexual ethics.
Obviously. I truly don't want that responsibility.
No, I do not have any of the like academic knowledge that would require. I just think that would be funny to get up in front of a class full of university students and be like, so you got to touch the clit. You got to touch the clit. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I am a sex educator and porn maker, and sometimes my job has been standing in front of university students saying you have to touch the clit. I have been sent to a college. That was what was buffering as I was like, I'm like, there are things I've done. No, wait, I have done that one.
That's amazing. That's impressive.
I also have a lot of opinions that I'm essentially going to be sharing over the course of this next episode, which doesn't make it different from any other, but
it's okay. True. Yeah, for some reason today when I woke up and I knew I had to pick the topic, I was just, this phrase sexual ethics just came to my mind and I was bouncing it around and I was like, could we do a whole episode about sexual ethics? And I was like, I kind of feel like every episode we share bits and pieces of our sexual ethics in the way that we respond to questions. And so maybe it makes more sense to continue to do that and to address a bunch of ethical dilemmas that are related to sex and dating. And that'll be a way in to discuss our sexual ethics. So I solicited a bunch of interesting ethical dilemmas from listeners and followers. And I sent them to you beforehand, as I usually do with our questions. And you said, I actually think it'll be better if I don't look at these. And you just surprised me. And I was like, ooh, I love that. I love those.
Yeah, exactly. It is a particular energy to bring to an episode. But I don't know. I'm feeling spicy and opinionated today. And this seems like the kind of topic that, like, you'll be throwing some stuff at me that I'll have some fun reactions to. So
yes.
We'll see what I'm – and that is also the caveat of, yeah, I'm talking about ethics with whatever falls out of my face instead of thinking about it first. So, like, I don't know.
You've been thinking about it for decades. Like,
I have. Know. Yeah, I certainly have. Yeah, no, there is a lot of stuff that just lives in there already. My ability to pull it up on demand,
right?
Like, that's a bit questionable, but we're going to see how it goes today.
Yeah,
and I'll come up with some clever stuff.
You will. You always do. I often find it helpful to reframe it as, like, if I had a friend who asked me this question, like, what advice would I give them? Because it brings a little bit of extra compassion that I wouldn't necessarily have if I was just, like, reading it on a Reddit forum or something. But yeah. So the first question, very simple. I'm sure a lot of people have faced this issue. Should I fuck my coworker?
So this is a do as I say, not as I do sort of situation.
Me too. Oh, God.
I
remember when you were fucking someone who you worked with. Those were some of my favorite text updates to get from you.
That was fun. And the thing is, see, sometimes my decisions about fucking people. Okay, listen. Should you fuck your coworker? It depends on so much, is the thing. Because, like, as adults, work is where we meet people. Right? Like, in the same way high school is where we met most of our peers when we were younger, right?
Are you going to make this answer into a capitalist critique? Because I am so here for it.
I mean, here for that. Yeah. certainly a problem that we spend that much time at work.
Yeah.
But it is also like a practical reality, and like, yeah, I don't know, you can meet people that you are compatible with there, and like, how close are you working with them and that sort of thing. I don't have a hard and fast rule against fucking coworkers, but I have also had crushes on coworkers in pretty much every workplace that I have had, and have fucked them occasionally in the workplace. It's just more interesting than helping customers. But see, that's how you get yourself into trouble. Because that is not a good reason to fuck a coworker. A good reason to fuck a coworker is like, either you need to be able to have some relationship outside of coworker,
mm-hmm,
whether that is good friend who I trust to like be able to work through a friends with benefits situation and talk to me, or whether that is like, no, I think I could date this person and it is worth figuring out the weirdness of working together.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you need to be able to trust that you can build at least some sort of relationship outside of just coworker, mm-hmm, to make it worth the potential drama that can come from fucking a coworker, because they're going to be stuck in your life and in your professional proximity,
mm-hmm,
regardless of how that situation goes.
Yeah.
And again, speaking as someone who was like, I don't know, fucking that guy's a fun stimmy thing to do while I'm stuck here getting paid. Not clever. Not fun.
Get
not
paid clever. To fuck. Steal from the bosses, am I right? Time theft, baby. We were like gossiping for a little while before we started recording, and I made a martini, and I'm realizing that I had half the martini before we even began the episode. So
love the energy. Love silly. This for us.
Yes. Okay, so
I'll take a hit or two and we'll even out.
Quite possibly, yeah. When I was 24, I worked at a sex shop for about 2 months. And in that time, there was someone who I worked with who I thought was very cute. I remember the first time I saw him and it felt like angels were singing and a spotlight had been shone on him. Like, I literally was like, who is that? It was one of those moments. Mm-hmm. And I was just so drawn to him right away. And it turned out as we got to know each other that, like, I don't think we would be romantically compatible, but we genuinely really get along well. And, like, I'm 29 now. Like, oh, my gosh. It is literally as of this month. I met him 5 years ago, and we've been, like, friends with benefits basically all of that time, except, you know, obviously during the pandemic have not been able to see each other very often.
Right.
But yeah, that was absolutely fine. And one of the reasons for that is that we didn't often work together. Like, our shifts did not often overlap, because when they did, honestly, yeah, sometimes we were slacking off and giggling and flirting and asking each other weird sex questions on the sales floor. But another reason is just that, like, I mean, I don't know if this is everybody's experience, but I find that friendships with benefits have usually more longevity than romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe that's just the how I date and like how my attachment issues play into the way that I date, but like, that's just how it's been in my life. And because there's not that romantic element for me, like, I wouldn't be as upset if for some reason while I was still working there he said, we actually can't fuck anymore. So there was pretty low potential for messiness, and I think that that was really critical. Right. I think I would have a harder time dating someone romantically who I work with, because there's just such a much higher potential for like bitterness and pain if anything goes awry. I think that in general, it's a good idea to like raise the issue if you're worried about it. Like, if you're in a situation where you're flirting with a coworker or even potentially you might fuck them, just raise it. Like, do you think it's, how do you feel about us being coworkers who might fuck? Like, do you think it's going to get weird? You can even raise it in a way that feels kind of jokey, but like, have that conversation, air it out, see what they think.
And how do you want to approach this at work is also another thing. Is this a thing we are disclosing to coworkers? Is this a thing we are like, can I be affectionate towards you in the workplace? Like, you're not going to make out on the sales floor or whatever, like in the cubicle or whatever. But like, if I like brush my hand on your shoulder as I walk by and say, hey, or whatever, like in the way that you do with people that you've been naked with and in the way that other people notice, is that a problem or not? Right.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, coworker, as you mentioned, can mean a lot of things. Do you like, are you scheduled together often, or just do your departments overlap, or is someone in a place of authority over someone else? Like, all of these are going to impact the potential fallout. And you want to consider, like, what are the ways it'll go wrong if it doesn't work out? Like, if you know, this isn't fun, if you break up, if you decide to stop fucking, whatever. Also consider the ways it's going to go wrong if this works out well. Because, like, that's also on the table. Not all workplaces love having their employees fuck, right? It doesn't necessarily make you great at your job. I don't know how other coworkers necessarily could feel about that situation. Yep. Like, it has social implications and things, right? So it's worth thinking about all of that and how you feel about all of that and how you're going to handle all of that. Because, like, I don't know, your coworkers' opinions aren't really any of your business, but it could certainly become your problem. So, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying they're right to have the opinions, but they will. So, you know, all of that is worth thinking about.
Right. Yeah. Also worth looking into and considering whether this is the kind of thing you need to talk to HR about. I've never had a job where that was really a thing, but I hear that some adults have jobs where that exists. For me, that's like a reality from the show The Office, because I'm a self-employed freelancer. But, you know, adults do exist out there.
Yeah, whatever your company policies around that are.
All right. This listener asked, should I pretend to be more into my partner's fetish than I actually am? And they provided a detail, which is, I am willing. And I think that they're using willing here in the sense that it's used on yes, no, maybe lists, which is sort of when you're sorting activities into a category that's like, yes, absolutely, I would like to try this. No, absolutely, I would not like to try this. And then in the maybe category, there's sort of two columns. A lot of people think of it this way, that are like, what's the other one besides willing usually called? Into?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's usually like maybe into, which means that like you're into it, but you just, maybe there's like specific circumstances or only specific partners or something, or you're just not sure. And then there's maybe willing, which is more like if you had a partner who was really into it, you would be willing to try it out, but it's not something that like inherently necessarily calls to you. So, this person is asking if they should pretend to be more into their partner's fetish than they actually am, if they're just willing but not actually, you know, like sexually drawn to it in the way that their partner is.
Sorry, I know you asked that whole question. I just need to have a moment that we got through the entire section on fucking coworkers, and I made zero jokes about how it is my job now to, that it is a job requirement for me to be fucking my coworkers. That is 100% my job these days.
Yeah, anyway. It would in fact be more awkward if you refused to
Truly, it's like I got so good at fucking my coworkers that I started doing that shit professionally.
Monetize your passions.
Live in the capitalist dream. All right.
Ooh, there's weirdly a lot of capitalism talk in this episode. You know, it's in our ethics. It just comes up when we talk about stuff.
Okay.
Should I pretend to be more into my partner's fetish than I actually am?
Should you pretend? So this is, okay, should you pretend to be more into your partner's fetish than you are is an interesting question, because so often our go-to advice is ask your partner, right? Talk to your partner.
Yep.
And like, certainly that can apply here. However, I think part of what we're talking about is like, that kind of explicit communication could kind of break the illusion of what you're trying to create.
Right.
Right. So I think it would be helpful. The way I would approach it, at least, is to start by learning more about what they enjoy about the thing that they enjoy. And obviously, we talk about this all the time. But in this particular moment, I think it would be helpful to pay attention to the parts of what they're describing. A, in the ways that they hope that a partner will respond to these things, like the ways in which your desire is key to their fetish or not, right? How prevalent are they describing your reactions to this fetish, right?
That's a really good point, yeah.
You know, how important is that to them? And what would your enjoyment of it look like in the ways mm-hmm. that they describe their enjoyment of this fetish?
Right.
Because that can give you a little bit of an idea of like, okay, well, what would it look like for me to pretend to be more into this? I think that will give you some more information on how to, like, on what it would entail to perform that desire and how important it is to your partner that you do that, like how much is your desire is even playing a role in what they're describing. Mm-hmm. I would also encourage you to, if you have the opportunity, talk about it separate from this particular fetish, but the idea of faking orgasms or playing into a thing or performance in sex, just theoretically, what do they think of this as a broad concept, right? When you mention the idea of faking orgasms or something, are they like, oh God, I would be mortified if I found out someone was doing that around me, right? So like questions like that, that kind of skirt around the concept of this and flesh out your and flesh out your idea of their understanding of their fetish through this whole process, you might wind up becoming more into this just gradually on your own, right? Because you are learning more about it, because you are getting an understanding of what's hot, because you're talking to someone you find hot about this thing and they're getting visibly turned on. Like you may learn to get to associate sexy feelings with this fetish through that communication.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you are somewhat setting yourself up on a track to like, as I learned, I am more turned on by these things. If that is a thing you want to lean into, I don't think, obviously I am rarely a proponent of lying to your partner.
Yeah.
I don't find anything wrong with, this feels a little good and I'm going to lean into it a little hard and it feels a lot good, right? Or I'm getting very turned on because of I'm enjoying watching you enjoy this, but I'm going to pretend I'm getting very turned on about the thing that we're doing, but my focus is really more on just giving you this pleasure, right? I think those are, I don't know, kind of the human gray areas of, I guess, akin to dishonesty, but the ways that we relate, like, no, I want you to feel like I'm enjoying this pleasurable experience. I don't need to get into the nuances of where that pleasure is coming from. I'm going to demonstrate that pleasure for you because this is a bonding experience, right?
Right.
I think that's human, right? So I'm not going to be like, absolutely never do that. It would be dishonest. But I would say start with all of this other stuff. To get an idea of like what it might look like to lean into that thing for them. And depending on how all of that conversation goes, it might make sense to say like, it's not totally my thing, but I'm going to like, would it be fun for you if for moving forward, like I turn this up a notch and like am a little more into it than I am, right? You can have that conversation once, and I trust most adults to have the cognitive dissonance to forget that for the next several months when we're playing this and just lean into the story you're both telling together. You know your relationship better than I do. You know if you would rather just kind of intuit your way around or have that conversation directly. I think this is kind of a gray, murky area. And I think as long as you are not like pretending to love a thing that actually grosses you out, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is fine if we're talking gradients on a dial, right? If we're moving from a 4 out of 10 to a 6 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10, like,
right.
I'm not going to hold that against you. I think we run into issues when you're like, no, I've been doing something I hate for the entirety of our relationship because it makes you feel good. Like, that's a problem.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So many points that I agree with. Sorry, I just took out my phone to make a note because while you were talking, it occurred to me that this episode should be called Moral, Oral, and More.
Yes. Yes, it should.
So many points that I agree with and want to respond to. I think, like you said, there is this effect that is like a contagion of hotness that a lot of kinksters experience where like your partner finding something hot helps you feel that it's hot because you prioritize your partner's pleasure and your partner's pleasure turns you on. Mm-hmm. I also think that usually there are crossovers between kinks that you can find. It's sort of like playing 6 degrees of separation or something. Mm-hmm. Like when my partner and I first got together and they told me that they had a hypnosis fetish, which is something that I had like not really even considered as a thing that could exist. At first I was like, well, that doesn't really seem like my kink. Like nothing inherently is calling to me about that. But the more that I learned about it, the more I learned that it can be incorporated in with like DS and with bondage and with age play and with all these other things that I'm into. So if there's any way that you can connect to a, like one of their kinks to one of your kinks, that can be really useful for both of you.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing I think is if you're ever having a conversation in a not directly sexual context, like you're talking about sex, you know, just like during the day or whatever, when you're not having it, and they ask you directly if you're as into this kink as they are or anything like that, I think you should be honest. I think that this is important because you're right. Lying to your partner, almost never a good idea. And I think that sort of like the whatever lying is part of like sexual performativity in the moment is like a white lie in the sense that like it makes people feel better and like doesn't necessarily cause any harm. This is my opinion, obviously. Nobody needs to agree with me. But I feel that if you're having that conversation in a not directly sexual context, you should be honest because in relationships that are healthy and good, we are honest with our partners. But of course, frame it in a more positive way. So like me and my partner have had a lot of conversations about the hypnosis thing. And what I usually say is like, it's not my kink, like exactly like you said, it's not my kink. I don't directly fetishize the thing in the way that you do, but I fetishize the ways that it connects with these other aspects of my sexuality. Or I really like seeing how it turns you on. I really like that power of being able to turn you on with it, that kind of stuff. I think your partner will be much more able to trust you if you are honest when you're in that type of scenario. And we did get a question about faking orgasms. And so I'm going to say something here that I also feel is true about faking orgasms, which is that performativity and authentic pleasure are not mutually exclusive. I think that you can be feeling even like a small kernel of pleasure in engaging in your partner's kinks and dial that up to look bigger than it actually feels for you. And that's going to feel better for your partner and also can sometimes get you more into it, like help you feel more pleasure in doing what you're doing. And so I don't think there's anything inherently wrong in performing that pleasure as long as in the throes of that you're not saying like, yeah, this is my fetish too, like which is just a different thing and not something that you want to lie about.
Right. And I think it's also helpful to pay attention to, like, we're talking about how, you know, it's a matter of degrees and gradients and like, you know, it's when you're really exaggerating things that we run into an issue. I would also look at how you feel doing it. If you wind up like this is faking orgasms or playing up more of a fetish or whatever, if you wind up in a state where you are resenting it or you're feeling like, ugh, we always do this thing you like, and it's because you have never said it is the thing that they like, they think it's the thing that we like, right?
Right.
Those are all signs that like you are not just playing it up a little bit, you are like tipping over into some flavor of dishonesty, whatever we want to call it. But I really, I don't know, something that was just kind of reinforced for me when I was hearing you talk as well about how you can kind of learn to find these aspects of a thing or blend it with these other kinks or whatever. I don't think anyone can learn to be into everything in the world, right?
Yeah.
But I do think, I don't know, when I think about, like, saying, should I just pretend to be more into this kink than I am, I feel like that should be almost a last resort or is kind of a failure of creativity and imagination. Right? Like, pretend shouldn't be your first choice. You should go through the, like, I don't know, spend some time really reflecting on the – I'm saying the word should a lot, but I would spend a lot of time reflecting on – the kink itself and like not just assume well, I'm not into it and there's no way I could possibly be into it, right? Like, how can I make this hotter for myself is my first question. And how can it make it look like this is hotter for me is like my eighth or ninth question.
Right. It reminds me of like if someone who you loved a lot tried a new fashion style and said, what do you think? And if it wasn't really your style, not really something that you liked, how do you respond to that question in a way that is kind? And I think the same thing applies sexually, which is you respond by affirming the things that you do like, the things that you are happy about, that you do think should continue. So if it's like a really wild, colorful outfit, but it's just not working, you can say, I love that you're taking such risks with color. I love that you're so bold with your style. And that's true. And it also helps them and encourages them in the direction that hopefully is positive for them. And similarly with sex, you do not have to lie to be able to emphasize the things about their kink that you like. You know, of course, there are always going to be incompatibilities where just there is something that your partner likes or that you like that the other person just cannot get into. And then you have to, you know, weigh whether that's something that you want to end a relationship over or what you want to do. But I think that you can do a lot by focusing on the positive.
Absolutely. And I mean, not for nothing. I don't know how I feel about giving this advice, but not for nothing. You will be more convincing than if you're trying to scrounge some version of pleasure out of nothing. Like, if you are, like, talking excitedly about the things you are excited about, that is more convincing than, like, yeah, no, I love this thing. This is great. Like, your partner can probably tell the difference if you've been dating a while.
Yeah.
And if they can't, that's other stuff to explore. But, like...
Right.
Yeah.
This week's episode of The Dildorks is sponsored by Beducated.com, like educated, but in bed. Beducated is like the Netflix of sexual wellness. It's an online platform that features video, audio, and written guides containing techniques and information that can help you level up your love life for just $9.99 per month. I was thrilled to see lots of sex educators in the Beducated library who I recognized, like Luna Matadas, who you might remember because she coined the phrase peg the patriarchy, which was later worn by Cara Delevingne without permission or credit at the Met Gala for some reason. Luna is brilliant, and she's got a few courses up on Beducated that you can check out right now, including a couple that I could really use, Building Your Self-Esteem in and Out of the Bedroom, and How to Sit on Someone's Face Like a Pro. Wow, doing the Lord's work. Click the link in our show notes to check out the Beducated library of expert-backed courses from Tantra to Kink. You can do a one-day free trial to see what you think, and if you decide to sign up, you can use the coupon code DILDORKS. That's DILDORKS. That code will get you 65% off a yearly pass, which offers unlimited access to Beducated's more than 100 hours of video and audio content, high-quality streaming on all devices, and new content released every week. And the discount you get with our DILDORKS code will be locked in for life. Click the link in our show notes. Thanks for the support. Okay, we've been doing kind of bigger, more general questions. I wanted to switch to a very specific question. I thought that this was so interesting. This was from one of our listeners, and I have paraphrased it here, so I apologize if any of the way that I paraphrased it was not representative. But basically, they said, I'm looking for a queer competent, trans competent, non-monogamy competent therapist to help sort out gender feels. I know, which, first of all, I, as Kate, will butt in and say, this is very hard to find. This is very, very hard to find, especially if you're not in, like, a major city. The person went on, I know a trans guy who I met through Bumble who used to be a therapist, but he had closed his practice to do full-service sex work. We went on a few dates. We became friends. We worked duo sessions together. We had friendly sex after a photo shoot to advertise our services. Eventually, he retired. And then they like fell out of touch for a period of time. And basically this person is wondering, would it be weird to schedule a consult with him to see if he'd like to become my therapist?
Yes.
I agree. I agree.
They would not accept that session. And if they would, I would be concerned.
And I want to say, like, with love, like, I actually completely understand why you're considering this, especially considering how hard it is to find a therapist who you vibe with. It is really, really, really hard. But my feeling is that the therapeutic relationship requires a certain degree of distance and objectivity. And I don't think that ethically you're going to be able to get that here. And I think that probably this person would agree, but I also think that talking to them would be a step that I would recommend taking if you're really wanting to go forward with this.
Yeah, and you can ask them, like, I don't think you're out of line to ask them for a referral, and I bet you they know some folks and would be happy to offer that to you. But their professional guidelines and licensing board also will not allow them to see you.
Right.
If they have been naked with you. So, you cannot become their client. I'm sorry. I bet you they're very clever. And I'm speaking to you as a person who has fucked most of the smartest therapists I know, which is my problem.
But none of them are your therapist.
None of them were my therapists, no. But I keep going to new therapists and being like, sorry, God damn it, but this other one would have said too many clever things. Unfortunately, their dick's been in my mouth. They would have said something smarter than the bullshit you're saying, though. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway.
I will say, I do think that there's space here to reach out and say, I'm looking for this type of therapist. It's been really hard to find. I feel like you get me on these levels.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to chat with you about this. I understand that there's ethical issues involved in that. Is there, like, a way that we could work together in more of like a consultant or coach capacity, more of an informal capacity? I still think that you should pay the person because this is still work and this is still their job. But I wonder if something that's more informal, that is not quite the same as a therapist-client relationship, would be more amenable. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. You can ask them for referrals. They probably know people, colleagues of theirs who work with similar issues and can probably suggest someone who they think would be a good fit, especially since they know you and they know a little bit about, you know, who you are and your personality and stuff. They probably know who in their professional sphere might be good to work with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like what you said about like coaching or consultant or something like that. Like that is absolutely a thing, especially if you're particularly looking for like an isolated issue, like if you're having a relationship thing that you just need to parse through this with someone or something, like they might be a good option for that. And like there's obviously still ethical complications there, but simply taking it out of like the medical system and taking it out of putting it through your insurance company and all of that and their licensing and all of that would make things a little less complicated if coaching is even a thing that they offer.
Right.
I would feel more apprehensive, I think, to like create a coaching service simply so that they can talk to me and not have it be in a therapeutic way, but I'm paying them for something that looks like therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Both of y'all's boundaries need to be rock solid to be able to do something like that, because that is a blurry kind of relationship that, like, with friendship and a sexual history and like there's too much going on there. I would be wary, but if it is a thing that they already offer, then like they may be more comfortable seeing you in that capacity than in a very professional licensed one.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year I got an email from my therapist and they said, I have a new advisor, just so everybody knows, my advisor is this person. And I recognized the person and I wrote back and said, oh, that's funny. Your new advisor is someone who I interviewed once for a journalism school assignment that was about being queer and trans. And my therapist wrote back and was like, oh, like, do you feel like that's a conflict of interest? Because, like, we can discuss referrals or, you know. And I was like, oh, no. Like, we had one phone conversation. I really don't think he would even remember me. I'm not concerned at all. But, yeah, a lot of therapists do take this very, very seriously.
Yeah. I know folks who, like, I mean, because I know queer therapists, and being a queer sex-positive therapist, obviously we know how hard these are to find. Like, the community, we know. Yep. Like, and they also, the thing you got to remember is your queer therapist needs their own queer community and moves throughout a queer community, which is also complicated for them and makes their job quite hard. Like, I've talked to, you know, I have a friend who has to be careful about, like, encountering clients or potential clients on OkCupid. They have a whole thing in their little thing, and they're like, if you have seen me, if you have considered seeing me, if you have booked a consult with me, if we have ever spoken in a professional capacity, do not even send me a message here. Like, no.
Yeah.
Right? But that is the thing they have to be very aware of and very conscious of. And I know this is true for a lot of queer therapists because our community is as small as it is. And they need to both maintain their professionalism and have a community of support and connections and adventure and all of the things that queers want in their life.
Yep. Okay, it's time to talk about orgasms. Do you want to do a hit of weed? Like, my body's hurting a little, so I was thinking about it.
Yeah, gladly. Okay. Give me 1 second. I just got to pack the bowl.
Okay, so the question is, when is it okay to lie about orgasms?
When you don't feel bad about it, honestly.
Hmm, interesting. Hot take. Like, say more.
Well, yeah, like... And, like, when you genuinely don't feel bad. Because, so, here, all right. So, yeah, there's the argument that if you are not telling this person that they are not making you come, you are not training them to be a better partner in the future, right? Or to be, acknowledge other people's pleasure or whatever. It's not your responsibility to teach them to ask if you are enjoying things, right? I would say it's probably not great to, like, lie to someone's face.
Yeah.
Unless you feel like it's a safety thing. But I generally do not advocate directly lying to your partner. If they say, did you have a good time? Did you come?
Yeah.
Don't say yes when you didn't, probably. But if we're talking about, like, lying as in just faking, I come back to what I was saying about resentment. Like, we talked about how, like, faking can heighten your pleasure. It can feel good to make them feel good. It can, like, you know, be part of the experience. You want to feel like you came. You can, you know, that is the story of the sex that you're having and you want to round up, right? Any of that is fine. You just don't want to talk about the fact that you didn't come. You're having a one-night stand with this person and you're tired and you don't care that you didn't come and you don't want to have to go through the work of explaining that you don't care that you didn't come because you didn't come to the situation expecting to come. Like, that's all fine. Like, the only person that is impacted by whether you have an orgasm or not is you. You are the one that feels the orgasm. If you are bothered that you're not having an orgasm and faking it, stop fucking lying and like advocate for your pleasure. And that is hard, and I'm not trying to minimize that, but work towards doing the things that get you orgasms, right?
Yeah.
If you just don't want to have the conversation, or you're tired, or it's late, or there are any number of other reasons, then you're like, no, this is the decision I have made. I'm just going to pretend to come because, like, that's the reason I want to do that. That's fine. I encourage you to think critically about your reasoning and, like, check in with yourself periodically to make sure that that's still true and that you don't have any, like, festering resentments or anything like that. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It's a judgment call. I don't really have an instance where I would say, like, there's a hard and fast rule, except probably if, like, you know, your long-term partner is staring you in the face and being like, you come when we fuck, right? And you're like, maybe less than great. But that's just indicative of a bigger problem. Like, that is not an isolated incident in your relationship if that is happening. I'm sorry.
I know. I'm in total agreement with you. Literally everything you said is things that I think and agree with about this issue. times that I have faked an orgasm, not very many, but the times that it has happened, I think 100% of those times was because I was having sex that I wanted to end and I didn't feel able to say that. So this almost always ends up being situations where I just like don't feel super safe around the person, like don't really feel like I can trust them and let go around them. And honestly, the fact that that had happened a few times made me go, huh, like maybe that's a signal I should like pay attention to and listen to, is that I'm so uncomfortable with certain people, even though I sat through this date with them, that like I felt the need to lie to them about my sexual response. Like that just doesn't seem right to me. Right. Not a good sign.
You're describing the date as sat through.
Exactly. Yes. Oh gosh. Yeah. There's a very particular man who comes to mind when I think of sitting through dates, and I will continue to drag him on this podcast probably until it ends. But whatever, it's fine. I think that you're absolutely right that chronically faking orgasms is usually a sign that you need to examine something more closely, whether that's your own tendency to fawn and to people please, which can be the result of trauma or past abuse or various things, or something up with the health of the relationship as far as like not feeling able to communicate or feeling pressured to have a certain response. I agree with you also that when asked point blank if you had an orgasm, I don't think it's a good idea to lie. Unless it's like really your imminent safety. And like, I know that there I know it sounds wild if you haven't like experienced this or thought about it, but there literally are situations where like someone is in a relationship that is so abusive and scary that to tell the truth about not having orgasmed would be effectively an invitation for more of that, which is awful. And I think in those situations, absolutely, you got to take care of your own safety. It's very, very important.
And like, yes, there are these situations where it is that dire. There are also situations where you fucked someone once and you are not going to fuck them again, and they are not going to learn from the information that you did not just come.
Yes. If nobody is going to be helped by me saying it and somebody is going to be harmed by me saying it, that really is a situation where in my ethics I go, all right, maybe I just lie. Who cares? It doesn't affect anything. Nothing.
And, like, do I think they're going to murder me? Probably not. Do I think they're going to hit me? No. Do I think they'll, like, be real unhappy about it? Maybe. Do I think I'll have to deal with their feelings? Almost certainly. Like... Yeah. Like, and I don't know if those feelings are going to be anger and aggression or any number of other things, but like,
there's so many different reactions when the lie is easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been times when someone has asked me if I came and I've said no, and they've said, I want to keep trying. And then they would keep trying. And I was like, I did not want you to keep trying. Like,
I'd prefer you didn't actually.
Yeah. This but you is don't, like, I think if you are going to be the person who asks, did you come, which I don't know about that question in the first place, I have complicated thoughts, but if you are going to ask that and the person says no, I think the next thing you should say is like, is there anything you'd like me to do about that, or something to that effect. Ask a question. Don't just take it upon yourself. You don't know what this person's relationship is to their orgasms. You don't know if that was what they wanted or not what they wanted. Ask the person.
Right. Like, I don't know. Thinking about the fact, like, did you come is a thing that, like, I even ask regularly in my relationship, because I can't always tell, partially because they're often behind me.
yeah.
I wasn't looking back at the time. It was unclear.
Right.
I told you I didn't care and keep fucking me anyway, and frankly, I couldn't tell. but, like... I don't know. Regardless of what the answer is, I follow up with more questions. Like, it's like, oh, you did? Great. What, do you want to again? Or we, like, I feel like I'm like, it's a handy question. This turned into an excuse for me to brag. I did not mean it to be. but like, no, you can, like, I'm like, I don't know. It is a useful question if you are using it to as like the actual data point. It is not a useful question if you are using it to ask if you were good in bed. Because they're different questions.
Yes. Yep.
They're different questions. Did you come is a different question from did you have a good time. Did you come is like, are you a person who likes to come several times? Are you okay with the fact that you didn't come? Did you want, are you moving towards coming at all? Did we make any progress in that direction? Dear God, I'm sorry. Like, it's only useful if you're engaging with the data point specifically. It's not useful if it's just... you're going to just treat it as a mandate on your character as a human. Anyway, you had me get high in the middle of this episode.
I know. We did get a little ranty. I always thought it was funny when guys would ask me this, did you come? And I would say no. And they would say something like, I'll get you next time. And I would be like, my friend, God. I really don't think you understand what has just happened because there's no chance that there will be a next time. And I want to make it clear. It's not just because they didn't make me orgasm. It's because they didn't try to make me orgasm. That's really kind of
I can't imagine a worse response to that. I've never even fathomed. Like, I thought I had outlined we had outlined some of the worst case scenarios already. But my God, that's...
I understand that you're tired. I would even prefer a, do you mind if I get you next time?
Right. But like.
That would be a little bit better. About 5% better.
Shit. You know, if you're tired, follow it up with, like, you can say, oh shit, I'm sorry, I'm really exhausted. I would love to, like, watch you get off if that is a thing you would like to do. Are there other things that we can do? Shit, tell them to sit on your face. That doesn't require... You can be tired. You can still... All you gotta do is lay... It's like only several muscles. I'm gesturing at my jaw. This is an audio medium. This is unhelpful. Anyway,
question. Have like some chocolate or something. That's what I do. If I came and I'm so exhausted that I feel like I can't get my partner off and I want to, I'll just have a little bit of chocolate. Orgasms
like Dementors?
Probably. No, that's no.
On multiple and levels. Also, no. I want you to know halfway through that explanation, where you were like, just have some chocolate. I fully imagined the person being like, I can't get you off, but I have this chocolate here if you would like it.
That would be so much better. That's a consolation prize I would gladly accept.
Almost like on a little platter, as if it were like on a hotel pillow. Like, here, yeah, I'm sorry. Can I offer you this complimentary chocolate at this trying time?
That fucking rules. Everything about it rules. Honestly, unironically, unjokingly, if someone did that, I would be like, kudos, this is amazing, never change.
I bet you could get chocolates that say I'm sorry, too. Anyway.
That's so fucking funny. God. Jesus Christ. Okay. Fuck. Weed was a bad idea, I think.
We're good at our jobs. I think that was fine.
Okay. One more question and then we'll wrap up. This person says, I lied about something feeling good on an early date and now they always do it. What should I do?
Go on testosterone and your body will change and be like, weird, my new body hates this. Specific advice, niche advice.
Yeah, I'm not sure that'll work for everybody's situation, unfortunately.
No. Okay. I mean, so like, okay, desires change. Find a new favorite thing. Pick something that they do. Wow. What are you doing right there? I've never felt... Have you done that before? Can you tell me what you're doing right there? That's fucking great, right? Like, even if they've done it before, you can discover a thing. I don't pay that much. I'll be like, I don't know, this thing? I've been doing 17 things with my tongue. Which thing are you talking about, right? You can totally find a new favorite thing. And like, I don't know, I'm thinking of my sex life with my partner. We move through the favorite things that we do to each other regularly. We have the things we revisit all the time, sure. And we have the new shiny things that like, oh shit, last time we fucked, I learned they like this. I'm gonna do this shit again and look like fucking sexual god. Look at me go, right? Mm-hmm. pick a few new favorite things and let this fade out. If you, I mean, like, this is, this advice is assuming that you don't want to sit down and say, yo, so I fibbed, sorry.
Right.
I love these other things that you do, but that one, I was nervous on my first date and I really shouldn't have done that thing and now we're here. But mm-hmm. I'm telling you, because I'm invested in continuing to fuck you and I want that to be fun.
Yeah.
So I want you to know what I actually like. That is a valid right. conversation. You can have that conversation. If you were willing to have that conversation, you probably wouldn't have written to me. So that's my other answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can tell the truth without admitting that you lied, if that makes sense. I think you can say, hey, XYZ thing, like, just isn't feeling as good for me lately. Would you mind trying mm-hmm. this other thing instead? Mm-hmm. I really think that most people are going to respond just fine to that because that phrasing does not imply that they're doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Like you said, desires change. That's very normal. I don't think you need to really provide any more explanation than that necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's probably all. Probably all that we can or should do today.
That's fair. I feel like you've cut me off from my high rambly advice, which is reasonable.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fair.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Dildorics, and thank you to the folks who submitted these ethical dilemmas for us to discuss. My name is Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I write a weekly newsletter at katesloan.email. The most recent one was about whether my kink is a trauma response. Spoiler alert, maybe, but we don't care. Shrug. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, and I have a book out at 101kinkythings.com. I also have another book coming out in April, which is called 200 Words to Help You Talk About Sexuality and Gender, and you can pre-order that now. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing and information about my workshops at BexTalkSex.com. I teach every Wednesday night at 7:30 Eastern on Zoom. Coming up this week is better Better Bottoming is Beautifully Bruised Booties. This is what I get for all the bees. But if you want to learn about spanking and see me spank my pet, you can head over to Eventbrite and search Bex Caputo for tickets to that and all of my other workshops. I am also quite naked on the internet, so if you go over to @BillyLore on Twitter or to BillyLore.com, the freshly built new website that, like, mostly even works, you can see all of my links. I'm real good at telling folks how to pay me and, you know, see more of my nudes because I'm a slut like that. Together we are the Dildorks. You can find us at patreon.com/thedildorks, where you can toss a couple of bucks our way to help us keep doing all the stuff that we're doing. It'll also, for $6 a month, you'll get access to our exclusive Discord where you can chat with us and send us your questions for episodes like these. Before every episode, we like drop a little thing in there asking for questions, which is nice. We always get some really clever ones. Those folks in there are great. Mm-hmm. And for $12 a month, you get access to our exclusive bonus episodes where we talk about all kinds of cool stuff going on in our lives.
Yep. I want to say thank you so much to our top tier Patreon supporters who we thank every week on this show. Thank you to Suki, Tiffany, Nat, Argo, Stabitha Christie, Matthew, and Amelia. We really appreciate the support. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. Thank you to our sponsor for this episode, Beducated.com. Don't forget to use our code DID. No, can't spell the name of my own show. It's Dildorks. It's DILDORKS at Beducated.com to get 65% off an annual pass. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. I want you in the morning. Let's make a cup of tea. I want you in the morning. Let's stay with me. Yay, that was okay. That was pretty good.
No, I think that was a fun one. I had a great time.
Oh, also for a bloop. I just, right before we started recording, I just reorganized my drugs drawer.
Great.
So there's like a basket for weed, a basket for shrooms, and a basket for weed edibles. And I actually have so many shrooms right now because I'm stocking up that like the drawer won't close properly. So I have to figure that out.
I love that for you.
Yes. That's fantastic. I'm going on a journey. It's great.
Oh, that's excellent. I still need to find someone local because I really want to try it again. You're also through that process. Excuse you, Google.
Everything is making noise at you today.
Everything's making noises.
The person who I was talking with on Tinder who told me that they liked our show. Yeah, they asked me what my favorite episodes are. And I was like, I really like our annual hypotheticals ones. Even though every year they're like so hard to edit because so we're just like, yeah, we're just so all over the place.
But we're coming up on that. We got like a month.
We are. Yeah. I'm going to have to get my partner to write things
they
for
have
us.
Good ones.
Yeah, they do. A perfect addition to the content note. Fuck. I love when there's some of you in the content note that I do. It always makes me laugh when I'm editing it. It's
inevitably funny.
I think it's okay for content notes to be funny, and I think it's actually really nice when they are.
Yeah. No, agreed, actually. Excellent.
Okay, I'm going to do the conclusion.
Oh, yeah, shit, we got to end the show. I was like, great, we done. Bet. See you next week.
Yeah.